Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome my colleague Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President of Stevens Incorporated, also a fellow at the Hudson Institute, former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. And I call upon Mary's State Department hat to help me with an analysis from Carnegie Europe, from Stefan Lenny, a senior fellow at the Carnegie Europe, dividing diplomacy into two camps, simultaneous camps, but nonetheless. There is the liberal order camp, which is something the U.S. practices and has since the Second War and the success of the U.S. to grow, to be prosperous, foreign aid, the world of the State Department and good relations with the allies and adversarial relations with the enemy, who are often in the 20th century, regarded as communist. Here we are in the 21st century, and Mr. Lenny is recommending that we've moved to something called the rules-based order, which does not castigate someone because it doesn't practice democracy. So much of the rhetoric these days is for democracy. There is none to be found in Russia, in North Korea, in Iran, and in China. And yet they are part of the apparatus of the order in Eurasia. There are adversarial relationships these days between the United States and Russia, the United States and China. Is there a transformation underway? Does it help to be rules-based? Is that an appeasement? Is that a retreat? Mary, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. I came across this for the first time, and it makes a deal of sense to me not to declare several capitals to be the enemy of democracy, knowing that the Global South and much of Africa and South America do not share that opinion and are backing away from the U.S. accordingly. How do you see it, Mary?
It's always great to be with you, John. Thanks for having me. I think to a large extent, the United States has learned over the past several decades that we're not very good at nation building and trying to encourage democracy on the ground. We saw that in Iraq. We saw that in Afghanistan. We're not set up for it. It's not what our military is for. And there isn't really popular support in the United States for that kind of George W. Bush effort. On the other hand, it is also clear that the United States and our national security is certainly served by having more democracies or liberal regimes in the world. They don't threaten us. The nations that threaten us are the opposite. They are totalitarian China. They are a theological revolutionary Islamic Republic of Iran, the dictatorship of North Korea, the criminal enterprise and of the authoritarian regime in Russia headed by Vladimir Putin. So the question is, how do you encourage democracy, which we know keeps us safer, while not engaging in the kind of adventurism that bogs the United States down in far-flung lands and doesn't achieve the result that we want? So the Carnegie essay is an interesting attempt to tackle this question. I think one of the points that the author makes is that it's not helpful to divide our friends into simply democracies, because we have friendships and alliances and loose partnerships with many regimes that share our national interests that are not democracies. Saudi Arabia, of course, is one of the greatest examples of this. It's a Sunni regime, an important anchor nation in the Middle East with important energy reserves that understands that the Shia Islamic Republic of Iran is the world's largest state sponsor of terror and the source of a lot of violence and unrest and killing in the region. And so Saudi Arabia may not be a democracy, but since the 70s and the Nixon era, it has been a very helpful friend and ally. And we have been able to work with MBS, the current de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia, to encourage him. And I think this is a natural instinct that he has anyway, to start to liberalize, to allow women to work, to change rules concerning divorce, to remove the religious police from the streets. So I think there is a middle ground here where we neither spread democracy nor do we simply throw up our hands and say, well, let's just set rules that we hope other nations follow. I think there's a better way. I think it's a way in the middle. And I think it's actually, you know, hopefully where our next president will go.
We're at the end of the Biden administration and the president is stepping aside for his vice president. So there's some continuity, not complete continuity. How would you measure the Biden administration at this point, 5 weeks to the election, X number of months to the handover in 2025? Is it advancing the first order, the liberal order? Is it advancing the rules base? Is it a combination?
The Biden administration and President Joe Biden in particular has spoken regularly about promoting democracy. That is a large part of his argument as to why the United States should equip Ukraine with weapons and materiel and intelligence to fight Putin's invasion of Ukraine's sovereign territory. However, it's kind of as I hinted at earlier, a crude division of the world, because there are many nations with which we cooperate that are not democracies. I mentioned Saudi Arabia, but Vietnam would certainly fit into that category as well. And in terms of the Biden record, I think you just have to look at the number of democracies in the world today versus when the president took office. And you can look at the number of deadly conflicts and civil wars. And, you know, clearly the president has not been successful in advancing a liberal agenda. And I think there's a simple reason for that, that he is afraid to use U.S. power. And as such, and has also appeased our enemies, such as Iran. And because of those things, he has allowed U.S. deterrence to erode. Our enemies are not afraid of us. And so the kind of adventurism that you've seen from Putin, from the Islamic Republic of Iran, the ejection of our friends from the Sahel, for instance, the ejection of us from the parts of Africa and our military bases there. This is all the result of just a real lack of U.S. leadership, courage to exert our will, and our unfortunate penchant in recent years of appeasing our enemies.
And therefore, we can say the rules-based order would serve Mr. Biden if he advanced it, the idea that you shall not crash the barriers of a sovereign state that's next door, but you certainly can make claims that may or may not be recognized by international bodies. I'm trying to discern what a rules-based order would look like if Russia or China were trying to use it to acquire Taiwan or acquire Donbass. What would it look like, Mary?
It doesn't work. The rules-based order, that phraseology was adopted after the end of the Cold War to describe things like the World Trade Organization, for instance, that would set rules that would allow fair trade between nations. But the problem with that concept is that you need an enforcement mechanism.
Right.
It's why international courts of justice don't work, because they don't have an enforcement mechanism. Ultimately, the only way that peace is not just achieved but sustained is through power and deterrence. And that's, you know, the ugly reality of the world as it is, not as we wish it to be. So, you know, regardless of how you want to describe a utopian world where everybody follows the rules, it's simply not going to happen unless there is a preeminent liberal power like the United States to enforce it. And we're not playing that role. And that's why you see quite a bit of disorder, chaos, and unnecessary death and killing. It's very unfortunate.
I'm speaking with Mary Kissel, Executive Vice President, Stevens Incorporated, a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute and former senior advisor to the Secretary of State. Two hot wars, two threatened wars. When we come back, this is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.